to commas.
Commas is all things tech.
You see culture and technology coming together.
Life hacks.
The practicality right now in the inefficiency of the internet of buying and selling stuff is extraordinary.
Entrepreneurship advice.
I think the first thing is you got to understand your business inside out.
Love and tech.
We've almost reduced dating to kind of this very momentary snap of a person.
It's going to be a fire show.
I have yet to see something these days that's truly differentiated.
New advice and new inspiration every show.
This really is about the next generation of creatives going faster, further than we did.
And now, Sequoia Blodgett.
Now let's start stacking them commas.
Moneybags. Hey. On this episode, we're catching up with Anthony Price, founder of Loot Scout, and we're talking about all the different ways that you can fund your company.
Entrepreneurship advice. Learn from the hottest and most successful investors, founders, and innovators in the game.
Determine your greatness.
It's time to get your knowledge up.
Okay, for sure.
What's popping? We've got Anthony Price on the line, founder and CEO of Loot Scout. Anthony, how are you doing?
I'm good, Sequoia. How you doing?
I am so good. So I'm super excited to talk to you and get into all the things that you have for us, including traditional and non-traditional finance when it comes to our business. But before we get into those details, I want to kind of dive into your background. So tell us a little bit about how you got started with kind of business finance.
Oh, so that was an interesting story. It was one of those stories where I kind of unexpectedly took a detour and ended up in the finance world. Growing up, I always was interested in starting a business of some sort, but I knew I needed to get some experience prior to doing that. So a number of years ago, I was looking for a job opportunity, and I applied for a job in economic development. And it's funny because I actually interviewed for the job, didn't get the job. So I was disappointed that I didn't get the job. But then they called me back probably about 5 months after I didn't get the job. And they offered the job to me. And what I found out later is that the person that they hired didn't perform up to their expectations. And so they brought me in. So that was a good story. And then what happened was they were interviewed for someone to do manage a loan portfolio. And I had never done that before. And so I learned lending from an economic development organization from the bottom up, everything from, you know, going out to finding the deals, to doing the underwriting, to presenting it to a loan committee, then once it's approved, getting it to an attorney to put it into the legal lease, into the closing, and then doing the monitoring. So I learned lending from the ground up, so to speak.
That is a lot of trust for you not to know what you're doing, for them to be like, hey, do all of that, right? How did you learn the details of that?
Well, so I've always been a person that takes it upon myself to learn something. So, you know, we're in the internet age. So if there's something that you do not know, you can learn it. There's all kinds of communities out there. So I took some classes learning about underwriting. And then the people that had hired me were very gracious and giving me an overview of, you know, the basics of lending and so forth. And so over the years, I learned it. I took classes. I did a lot of reading on my own. I met with lots of different bankers and so on. So it's the power of not giving up and the ability to learn. And I think we all have the ability to learn. And so I just put one foot in front of the other. I told people that I was new to this and they were accommodating, and I learned. I did it for about 5 or 6 years or so. And, you know, after that 5 or 6 years, I learned so much. And here I am now.
That's perfect. So you were an employee and then you decided to take the entrepreneurship leap. What caused that transition?
Well, I've always thought about having my own business, and I've kind of gone in and out of being an employee to being an entrepreneur. Sometimes when you're an entrepreneur, as you know, it's a bumpy road. Mm-hmm. It's never linear. It's never, okay, I'm going to start here, and then all of a sudden, you know, 10 years from now, I'm a billionaire. It just doesn't work that way. For some people, they get lucky, and it does work out that way. But I've always either been, you know, self-employed or had some business that I was developing. So it's never been linear. Like I said, I've come in and out of it. Just recently, in terms of 4 years ago, I left the company that I was working for. I was working for what they call a CDFI, which is a community development financial institution.
And these are lenders, generally non-bank lenders, who are interested in making loans to people who are underserved, so mm-hmm. communities that have been hit on hard times. So I worked in an organization like that for 4 years, and then 4 years, and then 4 years ago I left that to start my business, Loot Scout. So it's always been a dream of mine. And what my company does is we help entrepreneurs build better businesses and source capital.
So let's get into some of those details with Loot Scout. By way of helping entrepreneurs source capital, what are some of the intricacies that you're seeing? What are some tips that you can give entrepreneurs who are in the process of doing that right now? What does that process look like?
Yeah, so before, the reason I started this company was when I was working in economic development, people would come to me all the time. When I say people, entrepreneurs and business owners would say, Anthony, I can't find capital. And so over the course of the years, that sunk in, and I started believing that entrepreneurs couldn't find capital. They couldn't find capital. But after working as a non-traditional lender, I learned that there's tons of different ways to finance a business. So I said to myself, if I'm ever in a position to start a business, helping entrepreneurs source capital, I will. And that's what I started Loot Scout. So one of the things I always tell entrepreneurs to do is to look inward before looking outward. Because all these entrepreneurs and business owners are saying they need capital, which is true. But before you can actually go and find capital, you need to know what you're bringing to the table. So, for example, if you're a startup and you've been in that Silicon Valley world and you have no revenue and your business model isn't proven, a bank is not going to fund that. So
right.
You have to understand that a bank is not going to fund that. So don't go to a bank. Now, will investors fund that? Sure. Would family members and angel investors look at that? Certainly. So I think the first thing that needs to happen for any business owner or entrepreneur, you need to understand what you're bringing to the table. Is it a business that's generating revenue, that has cash that can support a loan? Then certainly there's tons of options for you. If it's a startup with no revenue coming in and no prospects immediately, then you have to know that there's a certain area you have to go. I always say, it picture yourself walking down a road, and all of a sudden you walk down this road, there's a big fork, and on the left side is the debt side where you can go to banks and other types of lenders, and the right side is equity. You have to figure out which path you need to take based on what you're bringing to the table.
What do you think in terms of that decision-making mode? What do you think is better than the other? Is one like, I'll give up some of my equity, or is one like, let me go take this loan? Is there one better than the other? What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, so my perspective is based on my experiences. I haven't gone down the equity road. I know some people who have gone down that road, you know, and so on. So I always look at things from a lender's point of view in terms of debt. You know, so if you're a startup, it's going to be difficult, and you have to understand that you're going to have to put something into the business. A lot of times when entrepreneurs are looking for capital, especially on the debt side, the lender will say, okay, do you have a home or do you have any assets? And entrepreneurs will say, yes, but I don't want to use that to secure a loan.
What can we come collect?
Yeah, exactly. Entrepreneurs are going to say, okay, you don't want to put any skin in the game. Why should I put skin in this game if you're not willing to put it into the business that you're starting? So that's really the main thing, is being 100% all in, regardless if you have to put personal assets on the line. You need to think about that. ASAP.
So a new conversation that's come up to the forefront is obviously crowdfunding and equity crowdfunding. And you talk about that in your book, which we'll get into in a bit. But touch upon some of the intricacies of crowdfunding and why you should go that route.
Well, crowdfunding is phenomenal. It's basically democratized capital. For the longest time, privately held companies, before they went public, you know, Facebooks, Airbnbs, Airbnb, Lyft, Uber, all these great companies, Apple. If you weren't an accredited investor, which is something that the SEC determines, which is someone who makes $200,000 or more a year for several years in a row, or has $1 million in assets, you could not invest in privately held companies. So this was no law, that wasn't available. So back in 2012, the Jobs Act, the Obama administration passed this legislation, which allowed, it basically opened up the whole world to crowdfunding to unaccredited investors, which is basically majority of the population. So now with regulation crowdfunding, which was passed in 2012 and 2016, the SEC finally put the rules around it. Anyone can invest in privately held companies. There are specific platforms that you can go to, such as WeFunder, StartEngine, and a host of other Republic. Those are all platforms where you can go. And let's say, for example, I want to go into invest in my business. You know, the platforms do some vetting, and once they do the vetting and so forth, now I can offer an investment. And I think one of the things that's interesting about crowdfunding, a lot of people refer to it as equity crowdfunding. There are different types of crowdfunding, and, you know, there's three different types. One is donation-based crowdfunding, where you want to go on a vacation, or someone's sick in your family, you need to raise money. You know, you can go to GoFundMe and put a campaign up there, and people will give you money, and it's basically a donation. And then the second type of crowdfunding is the crowdfunding that is known as reward-based crowdfunding, and that's Kickstarter, that's Indiegogo. And these are platforms where you can go, and you may have a business that you're building, or you may have a community project where you want to remodel a vacant space and have arts and other kind of community activities. You can go on the platforms, such as Kickstarter and Indiegogo, and raise money. And, you know, people have raised tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars. There's been some projects that have raised millions of dollars through reward crowdfunding. But the thing about reward crowdfunding, you're not getting any equity or any kind of investment in the company. You're generally getting a reward. That reward could be a book. That reward could be a T-shirt. That could be the product. Reward-based crowdfunding. And then the last one is investment crowdfunding. And investment crowdfunding could be, you know, you're offering equity or security in your company. It could be debt. Could be some kind of revenue vehicle, but you're actually giving some kind of ownership or investment in your company. And that kind of crowdfunding has also been referred to as reg crowdfunding, regulation crowdfunding, which is based on the Jobs Act that was passed, or sometimes you'll be referred to as investment crowdfunding, or occasionally you'll hear people say equity crowdfunding, which is sort of a misnomer because it doesn't always have to be equity. It could be, you know, some of the things I just described, debt or revenue share. Yeah, so I'm excited about it. I mean, I'm really, really excited about it. You know, 10 years from now, we're going to look back on that legislation that was passed in 2012 and say this opened up the world of investing and building businesses to everyone, not just the wealthy accredited investors.
So those are three really strong ways to fund your company, but you've also written a book, Get the Loot and Run, which you've kind of broken down a lot of other examples in over 400 pages. So give us a little bit more of insight. Obviously, you don't want to give us all the gems, but give us a little insight on other ways that we can also look into funding our businesses.
Yeah. So there's over 40 different ways of raising capital for your business. And the reason I wrote the book is I wanted to help entrepreneurs build better businesses. When you build a better business, there's a greater chance that you're going to be in business longer. You're going to employ people and you're going to have an impact in the community that you serve. And then the second reason I wrote it is because I wanted to help entrepreneurs access capital. And so there's so many different ways. So my background is economic development. I've worked for a number of different cities, helping to retain and recruit businesses. So there are economic development programs throughout the country that can help you grow your business. Pretty much every single state is competing against every state. So I'm in Connecticut right now. You're in California. California has specific programs for entrepreneurs. Specific counties have programs for entrepreneurs. A lot of times there are low interest rate loans that are available. Occasionally, they're grants. Now, grants, everyone wants a grant, but grants are very difficult to get. And usually, an economic development organization will give a grant because they want something. So they want you to create jobs, or they want you to retain jobs, or they want you to, you know, provide some kind of economic impact within a community. So economic development funds are all over the country. So I would say wherever you're located, look at, you know, what's offered in your particular state. And usually the place to start is you'd go into California and say Department of Economic Development or something along those lines. You Google that, a whole bunch of different programs will come up. So I always say that's one great place to start is through the economic development programs that may be available in your state.
So obviously you're not going to run in with your hands open and be like, give me money. So what should, I wish that were the case, right? So what should entrepreneurs do to prepare to get this money for their businesses?
Yeah, so that's a really, really great question. As I mentioned, you know, we want entrepreneurs to look inward before looking outward. So if you're looking for some kind of grant, some type of loan, you need to make sure that you're ready to accept that kind of money. And it, certainly there's going to be some scrutiny and due diligence done before, you know, a dime is put on the table. So understand, you know, what you're looking for in terms of funding and how the funding can help grow your business. But you're going to want to pull your copy of your credit report. You can pull a copy of your credit report from the three major credit bureaus once a year for free. And so you don't have to pay anything. So you want to look at your credit report and see if there's, make sure that everything there is accurate. If there's some discrepancies, you can, you know, dispute the information that's on your credit report. So that's going to be the first thing, is look at your credit report and make sure that your house is in order. If there is something that's wrong on the report, file the report, and that will get corrected. You want to make sure that you have your financials ready, you know, that you filed your taxes. Most lenders or economic development organizations are going to want to look at 2 to 3 years of your tax returns. So make sure your tax returns are ready. Make sure that you pulled your credit report and you've addressed any issues that may be lurking. And then also, too, next, look at, you know, how you're going to use the money. What will be the money used for? And then if it's a loan, you know, how are you going to pay it back? And lenders want to make sure that you're paying the money back through the cash flows of the business. They want to see that the business is healthy enough that it can afford to pay loan plus interest, because no one's giving you free money. But the one thing I will say, if you do use economic development funds, the interest rates generally are more attractive than a bank because of their mission in terms of creating jobs and so forth.
There's a couple of other things that you also touch upon in the book, and you talk about the business model, why you should be prepared, because obviously any investor is going to want to know how I'm getting my money back. At least I would want to know, right? So what are some business models that companies should consider when generating revenue?
Okay. So this, in terms of business models, I mean, that is the most crucial thing for any business. I say that the business model is the engine that makes your business go. And there's all kinds of business models these days. If you look at LinkedIn, which is the number one networking site for business professionals, their business model is really simple. They provided a tool for people to network, and it's free. And at least the basic level is free. Then they have other levels for additional information that you want to have in LinkedIn that you're going to pay for. So they have sort of a free place where you start, and then they have the other tiers. So that's a business model. There's just so many different business models out there. I certainly can't go through all of them, but you need to have a business model that's going to be able to generate revenue and sustain the business in the long run. If you look at a business model like Uber, Uber's business model is interesting because it's they took people who had cars and wanted to monetize those cars. They weren't using them all the time. And then they took people who wanted to get from point A to point B pretty much anywhere in the country. And they created this two-sided market. And Uber's business model wouldn't work if they didn't have people who wanted to get around and people who had vehicles. So that's another business model out there. And like I said, there's just no shortage of business models out there. If you're creative and can find a way to generate revenue, lenders will look at it, investors will look at it. There's been some companies that have been, you know, venture backed that haven't generated profits for years, but the long-term goal is for them to dominate an industry. And once they start doing that, then they'll be able to monetize it.
I love that you bring that up, freemium marketplaces and all these variations of business models, because I feel like when you go to market, people feel like they have to have a certain business model and that's it. But 9 times out of 10, whatever you go to market with, your business is going to pivot, or you're at least going to iterate on that business model. So you may start out with something in the beginning, but as you start to build out the company, the business starts to change, right? So how flexible should you be in that process?
Yeah, I mean, you raise a very interesting point. Now, the whole pivot thing works when, for the most part, you're using someone else's money. Usually investors or venture-backed companies, they're going to give you money because they're betting on you, the jockey, not the horse. They believe in you, and you're basically experimenting, really, because for the most part, you don't have customers. And so you may start off, the investors may give you money and say, okay, start off. You say, I'm going to start off in this direction. And then as you start off in a certain direction, the customers will say, no, we don't want this product, but we want this other product. And then so you pivot because that's where the customers are who are willing to pay money. The difference between that model, you know, investors giving you money and then the bank giving you money, the bank is not going to wait for you to figure out how things are going to work. I mean, you're using money that the bank is tying up. So they want you to already have your business model down, packed, and ready to go. So you have to, that's, as we mentioned, the debt and equity fork in the road. That's the other part of this discussion. You have to make sure that you're, you know, you've already thought ahead if it's going to be a debt play or an equity play. And as you mentioned in the book, there's all kinds of business models. Angie's List was bought a number of years ago. You got business models that will bundle a whole bunch of things together to help sell a product, or there's leasing. You know, you look at Walmart and IKEA, they both have two different business models. They both want to keep the price low. Whereas IKEA will pack, you know, if you go to IKEA, you get a great price on furniture, but you're lugging that home and you're putting it together.
it's on you.
You know, that's why they keep it so. Have you done that before?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely in the college years. Definitely assembled some furniture.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, you know, that business model, they know that people want, you know, inexpensive furniture, and they're willing to put it together. And by shipping it flat, they're able to, you know, bring everything to the warehouse and, you know, have tons of items there versus, you know, you having to having them assemble it, and then they have less space, and then charging for delivery. So that's another business model. So definitely spend some time on figuring out what your business model is and understanding who your customers are and what your value proposition is for those customers.
How much time should you focus on that? Because I feel like a lot of people go to market and they're like, okay, this needs to work like next month. Like, that's not realistic though. So how much time do you recommend you focus on like figuring out your business model before you A, go see a bank who actually is not investing in you until you do figure it out, or B, go see a VC who may give you some leniency?
Yeah, it varies. I mean, think about it. Amazon for a long time didn't make any money.
Mm-hmm.
But Jeff Bezos kept telling people, I'm investing in the future. I'm investing in the future. I'm bringing people to this platform. And investors believed him. And so, you know, now in hindsight, you know, he was right. He was going to build a business, and he's went in all different directions in terms of just not just selling goods, but also to providing the servers that pretty much the many, many businesses use. So the main thing is, most businesses, especially venture-backed businesses, aren't going to start making money right away. So you're going to have patient investors. And if you look at the whole VC game, I call it a game because it's a very difficult game. And most companies end up not being the billion-dollar companies that the VCs are looking for. But, you know, in the VC land, it's generally 10 years. When an investor gives you money and they're trying to get out of that, make some money before the fund has to return money back to their limited partners. And so that's generally 10 years. It could be a little bit longer if they get, you know, extensions. But, you know, these companies that are becoming big companies and changing industries, generally it takes, you know, 10 years or so for them to get to that point. You know, another great company that's had some trouble recently has been Tesla. Although I just read tonight that they broke the record on the number of cars.
They did.
They set out this quarter. Yeah.
90,000, yeah. I think.
Yeah. And so they've been around, I think, like 16 years. They've only made money a couple times. But fortunately, they've had some patient investors and so forth, and they see the where the future is going. But so that's a dangerous game to play. Not all investors are going to be that patient with you. And when you're using someone else's money, you're basically playing by their rules, not your rules.
I recently came across this new breed of entrepreneur, and I don't know. I mean, I guess because I was living in Silicon Valley for a really long time, so I wasn't really familiar with this other side of the world. So there's like this venture backable entrepreneur who wants to build this massive scalable company. And then there's like these like smaller, small, medium business entrepreneurs who are just massively profitable, right? Can you explain a little bit between the differentiation of the two and when you should actually look to seek VC versus like getting a loan or doing it yourself and just focusing on revenue?
Yeah. What I always say to people is the best way to fund your business is to have customers fund your business. And that's building a product that they like, that they trust, and that they're going to use. I mean, that's the first place to start. If you can come up with something that people are willing to buy from day one, those are going to be your investors, and they're going to spread the word about the product to everyone, and you're basically going to have zero costs for marketing. But people who are looking to build something that doesn't exist now, that they're planning on scaling, you know, certainly you're going to, for the most part, going to need someone else's money. Usually you start off with your money, and then once you've drained or depleted your resources, you go to family and friends, and then you get some money from them. And then once you drain those resources, hopefully by that time you've created some, you've achieved some milestones, you start getting some traction. And if it's potentially to be, if it's going to be in a big market, that you're going to have a good chunk of that market, and you have a good team that you've put together, and you have a track record of success, then you may start looking at, you know, VCs. Generally, first, it's angel investors. They'll put a little bit of money in it, and you gain some traction. Then, if there's an opportunity to be a big company, a Tesla, an Airbnb, an Uber, a Lyft, if it has the potential to scale that size, then VCs are going to be, you know, looking for you. And if you've had some level of success, people will start talking, and those VCs may come to you, and you don't have to spend a ton of time looking for them, because it is, still is a very sort of private club in order to get VC monies. So it's always best to get a warm introduction versus a cold call, and so forth. So I guess to summarize that, if you're going to get VC money, you're going to have to be in an industry that has potential to scale, and for you to be a big, massive company, generally in the billion-dollar range at some point down the road.
I love that you mentioned relationships, because there is some overlap I've been seeing recently where traditionally these type of companies would not get VC funding. Like, I have a friend who has a company, Natural Club, and they just went through Y Combinator, and Rich Lou Dennis invested in their company, and now they're like scaling to a bigger size company, which traditionally would be considered a small, medium sized business, right? And so a lot of that stems around relationships. Like, we just saw Jay-Z invested in this cookie company, and we're like, wait, what? So I think that having those relationships is super important, and it can kind of waver as to if you even go a certain route, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, relationships are important in everything that we do in life. And a lot of people try to monetize those relationships too soon. I think relationship, you shouldn't be looking to monetize relationship. If you trust someone, you like someone, and you're willing to learn from them, potentially they're a mentor, you know, build a relationship first. Don't jump into a relationship trying to figure out how you monetize it. You know, build a relationship, build something on trust. Because when someone invests in your business, they're basically investing in you because they trust and believe in you. And there's been many instances out in Silicon Valley and Boston and all over the country where entrepreneurs failed. They got investment money, they failed the first time, but the investors were so confident in them that they would find something, that they've invested in their second business and the third business. And by that time, you know, their new business does take off. So never cut corners with relationships. That's really all we have in this world, is our reputations and the relationships that we have. Start building those right away, and don't try to monetize those relationships right away.
Great advice. Is there anything else in the book that you want us to know?
Well, from my perspective, it's the only book that talks about these 40 different ways of raising capital, whether it's economic development funds, contests. That's the other thing, too. I didn't even get into that. There's so many different contests out there that you can enter. There's probably a pitch competition probably every day of the week around the country. So if you have a business idea, there's tons of these competitions that you can enter to get money from there. Actually, my editor had a sort of a sad story. Her husband had passed away, and she went up into her attic, and she was digging around, and she saw these trains, and she said, these things look old. And so she grabbed those trains, and she sent it into an appraiser. And come to find out, this old train was worth tens of thousands of dollars. So that's another way. I mean, we have all these things, possessions in our garages and so on. You never know. You might be able to sell that stuff. It may not be tens of $20,000, but it could be $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, and that's a start. You know, a lot of people have these old clunkers in their backyard, and they're saying they're going to fix these cars up one day, but you might be able to sell that for a couple thousand dollars, just enough to get your business started and going. And as other people see that you're working on the business, that may give them confidence to put a little bit of money in your company as you move forward.
So you're sitting there patiently waiting for Grandpa to die.
Well, no, we don't want that to happen. You'd be surprised what people have in their possessions, especially in this country. All the things that we save and just put away for some time down the road, and we never use them.
That's awesome. So how do we gain access to the book?
So the book is available on Amazon. You can jump on Amazon. But if they contact me through LinkedIn and mention it, I'll give them a special discount when they contact me through LinkedIn. So you can either pay the full price on Amazon or contact me on LinkedIn and I'll give you a special price for the book, Get the Loot and Run.
So how do they find you on LinkedIn, and then how do they find Loot Scout?
So they can just look me up, Anthony Price, Loot Scout on LinkedIn, and send me an invite and we'll connect.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Anthony, for dropping those gems. We really appreciate you.
Well, thanks for having me. And I love what you're doing, and you're getting information out to people who need this information. So thanks a lot for having me.
So check it out. Anthony had a dope interview, and he had so many gems that he dropped in that interview. But I think people are still super confused as to like when they should pursue venture capital versus when they shouldn't. Because there's some companies that are super capital intensive, meaning that they need a lot of money to get off the ground. So you're looking like Uber, Rent the Runway, Instacart, like all of those companies need a lot of capital in order to grow and scale, right? Versus an info products company or an e-commerce company. So I have friends like Danielle Leslie, who has this company, Course From Scratch, who generated $6 million in revenue. She didn't need to go through the process of raising any type of venture capital to grow this company. She basically created a small product that took barely any money to get off the ground and utilize the money that she made, invested it back into the company, and continue to do that until the company got to $6 million of revenue. So I think a lot of people think that they have to go get these venture capital investments in order to grow their companies, but some companies don't need to do that. And I think people need to know the difference between the two. Also, e-commerce companies. I've seen companies like Sassy Jones Boutique, who generated $1 million in revenue doing a Facebook Live video, which blows my mind, okay? So if I'm on Facebook Live and I'm talking to my audience and I'm seeing these sales come on, I'm knowing right then and there that I don't necessarily need to go seek any type of outside investment. And the reason why she's able to do that is because she has a product that doesn't cost a lot of money in order to manufacture. So if you think about it, she sells it at a high price point. It doesn't cost that much to make, so she has really good margins. So she doesn't need a huge capital infusion to get that company off the ground. And there's tons of other companies in the e-commerce space that are doing that, like Base Butter, which is a company that sells butters. There's oils. There's all kinds of companies that I've seen in the market that are like moving the needle, that don't necessarily need a bunch of capital and are hitting six-figure months. Like I'm talking about, you're seeing them come out maybe in January and 2 months later, they've got six figures in revenue month over month. And that to me is insane, but it's also realistic because those type of companies do exist. So I think you need to be very cognizant of the type of company that you want to bring to market and also be mindful about ownership, right? You don't necessarily need to own your company. Back in the day, the thing was, we got to own. But what if you want to be an angel investor? So you may build up this company so you can have an exit, a liquidity event, meaning you can get rid of that company and then use the money that you get from that exit to actually invest back into other businesses as an actual angel investor. And I think that that's something that people are starting to consider now, especially on the other side. They've been considering it, right? Like, that's not something that's new to them, but for us, it's something that is a little bit newer. So maybe that's something we're considering. So how do you want to position yourself in the market? Do you want to be that business owner that has the freedom to do what they want with the company? Because you also have to consider that when you bring on investors, they are now the owners of that company, right? So it doesn't, you don't have full ownership anymore. You're splitting that ownership with a bunch of different people, which means you also have a lot of opinions that you're splitting with different people, right? So you essentially are becoming an employee of your company. So that's something you want to consider too. So I think it ultimately all depends on how you want to break this down and what your end goal is. If your mission is ownership and you want to make sure that you have something to pass down to your kids from generation to generation, then go that route. Go ahead and create a company that's not capital intensive, that you can build up, that you can make profitable, and you can give your kids and they can build on that and continue to grow and scale that way. Or if your idea is to create a big, massive company that needs venture and it's tech enabled and it creates jobs for all these people and disrupts industries, then you can go that way too. So at the end of the day, it totally just depends on what your needs are, what your goal is, and what your life's purpose is, right? And that will make your decision. And by the way, I think it's so interesting because in the Black community, we still look at $1 million like it's a lot of money, but it's not. Like, realistically, like, I remember going up to Silicon Valley and having a conversation with Tim Draper. Now, of course, perspective, right? He's a billionaire, so he's not looking at him. When I say billionaire, I said it would a B. He's not looking at $1 million like a lot of money. That's like money he wipes his with, right? So that's totally a different conversation. And for us, we're not used to looking at those numbers at that type of magnitude or at scale. But we got to start thinking bigger than that. We got to start valuing ourselves in a different way. We got to start pricing ourselves in a different way and understanding that we are valuable. Like, we have something very valuable to bring to the market. So creating a product or service for $30, although it could be rational in terms of what you're bringing to the market, it doesn't necessarily mean we cap that, right? We can have a product or service that costs $2,000, $5,000. Commas cost $5,000. Like, that's our package because we bring a massive amount of value to the market. We're teaching you how to get your business off the ground, how to grow your business. We're bringing the top of the top in terms of experts and coaches in order to grow and scale your business, right? So we understand our value. So we can hit that number very quickly with a limited amount of customers, whereas selling a $30 product may take you a much longer time to do. So I think it's really understanding what type of business you want to have, right? Like, and understanding that you are valuable and you can hit $1 million. And once you're out there and you're building a business and you switch your perspective and your mentality and your thinking, then that becomes realistic for you, right? When you start seeing people who have hit that $1 million, like, I have so many friends that are millionaires, it's ridiculous, right? When you start seeing those type of people hit those $1 million marks, then it becomes normal. It normalizes it for you. So even looking at on a street level, right, Nipsey Hussle, he's a great example. He understood the value of his merchandise. He understood by selling a record for $1,000 that he would be able to continue to do that because he knew that there was value and he knew that he could offer his fans an exclusive experience. And so once you start thinking outside of the box and in a bigger picture setting and stop limiting your beliefs to I only can make this much money or I've only made this much money. Like, I didn't start making money for real until I started investing in myself, right? And then all of a sudden, my bank account grew. When I said, okay, I'm going to pay this coach $2,000 to make sure that I know what I need to know to build my business, then all of a sudden things started growing in different ways, right? And I had to switch my mentality. It's a mindset shift that you really got to think about because we didn't grow up. We grew up thinking $1 million was a lot of money. At least I did, right? I'm from the hood. So when I grew up, it was like $1 million was like unattainable. It was like something that I couldn't even fathom until I moved to Silicon Valley. It was like $1 million. What are you talking about? Like, that's like chump change, right? And so I think that that's the perspective that we have to go in, knowing that at the end of the day, we got to be thinking on the larger scale. Like, we got to be playing like the white boys. We got to be playing in the mindset of like growing these large scalable businesses, or even if they're not large scalable businesses, even small, medium businesses. Like I was saying with Danielle Leslie earlier, she had $6 million in revenue, right? That's normal. That's normal for them, right? So we got to start to normalize finance for us.
And Anthony definitely summarized it. 3 bullet points that you guys should be working on when you're trying to figure out how to get funding for your business, how to finance your business so you can start to generate this revenue or that you can grow and scale that business is 1, looking into VC, looking into loans, looking into grants. I mean, you guys heard it in the interview. He dropped those gems. So definitely rewind if you need to run it back. But make sure that you're tapping into your resources because that's how you're going to get your business off the ground.
This is The Plug.
You know who's The Plug.
It's time to get caught up on the hottest in tech.
Keep it locked, you heard.
With Sequoia Blodgett.
I see you, little mama.
Commas is a community of like-minded startup entrepreneurs with the goal of being profitable. We focus on helping founders gain an understanding of how to build an online, digital, or tech-enabled business through courses, coaching, and support. So what does that mean? Well, we have a program for new entrepreneurs with no or minimal prior business experience looking to go from zero to a growing startup. That includes courses in entrepreneurship mindset, product development, branding, marketing, publicity, fundraising, and business formation. Pretty much everything you need to get your company off the ground. In addition to that, we have a new program for established entrepreneurs looking to scale their startups with automated sales funnels and paid advertising. We also help them focus on hiring and managing a team. If you're interested, log on to commasclub.com for more information. Until next week, it's your girl Sequoia, and I'm out.